Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, back in the studio live alongside Travis Anderson. Got a little bit of an extended weekend. You didn't, however. You were definitely busy with all the high school and junior college basketball action. A lot of it over the weekend, to say the least.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and looking forward to Thursday.
Yeah, we have some high school basketball coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's the final week of the high school basketball season, and live coverage is going to begin at 3:30 on Thursday. The Emory Lady Spartans will take on the Carbon Lady Dinos. We'll be live in St. George for that contest. In fact, we're going to talk about that game today here on the show. We're going to be joined by Coach Lynn Tuttle. We'll talk about the Emory Lady Spartans' big victory over Providence Hall. And then tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Coach Ted Bianco of the Carbon Lady Dinos. As far as boys basketball goes, it's over with here in the local area. As far as the 3A classification goes, Pinnacle is going to start the state tournament in 8 days. They're going to be in state tournament action. But as far as the Carbon and Emory Spartans, Carbon Dinos and Emory Spartans go, yeah, that season is finished. We'll give you the recaps on that coming up here in just a few moments. Hey, let's talk NFL, and we'll dive into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have released Doug Martin. Martin is, I don't want to call the guy a disappointment, because he's gone, what, for 1,400 yards twice?
Mm-hmm.
In his time in Tampa Bay. But I think the expectations that come along with what he accomplished early on, yeah, maybe a little bit of a disappointing tenure in Tampa.
I think it is. If you look at everything that guy was supposed to bring to the table for the Buccaneers, I think it's a disappointment. A little bit, you expected more.
I don't think it was a surprise. I expected him to be gone. In fact, in 2016, he sent a 5-year deal with worth $35.7 million, and that included $15 million guaranteed. But the NFL suspended him for 4 games for violating the policy on performance-enhancing substances. He entered a drug rehabilitation program, but because he engaged in conduct detrimental to the team, the Bucs were no longer on the hook for any guaranteed money, which was pretty much all they needed. The writing was on the wall. He was no longer going to be a part of this team. Like I said, he had big, big seasons, 2012 and 2015. I don't think this guy is quote-unquote a tease, which I know several pundits out there have called him a tease. 5'9", he's got some bulk to him. I don't know that he still has the speed bursts that he once had, but I think he could be a productive running back. And I start thinking about teams that would sign Doug Martin, and a couple come to mind. First off, would you give Doug Martin a contract if you were a general manager or an owner of an NFL team? Would you take a chance on this guy?
It would. It just depends on the team. It has to be the right fit. It has to be a team that's probably in playoff contention.
Okay, with that being said, let me throw a couple of teams out there. Seattle.
Yes.
Would he fit in Seattle?
I think he would.
I don't mean this in a negative way, but Pete Carroll does a very good job of maintaining personalities. I guess that's the nice way to put it. Look, he's got baggage. He has baggage.
Okay, he's the whole Seahawks roster does.
The whole Seahawks roster does. And I think that that's a great fit for Doug Martin. They've struggled with the running attack. Now, look, you could throw whoever you want in that backfield right now. It's not going to matter because that offensive line is terrible. But I think that Doug Martin, I think that this guy still has a little bit of juice left in the tank. To me, it's not nearly as big as a risk as Eddie Lacy was. I think Seattle could be a very possible landing spot for him. Let me throw another one out there for you. New England.
Yep, that's a team that I was going to throw out there. The Patriots, with Deion Lewis being a free agent, Rex Burkhead's a free agent. You have James White still on the roster. Mike Gillisley isn't going to cut it. I think Doug Martin in New England could thrive with Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I do too. And, New England isn't exactly known for paying running backs top dollar.
Yeah.
And the next contract that Doug Martin signs is not going to be top dollar. So for me, those are the two teams that I would consider the front runner to land his services. I think that's where he's going to fit in best. Give me New England or give me Seattle. You look around, you start looking at some of the other squads in the NFL. A lot of teams already have a featured back. I don't think he's quite ready to be a third down back. I think there's still enough juice left where he could be a featured back. I don't think you want him as a third down back, and I don't think he's going to accept a role in which he's a third down back unless it's the last possible scenario. Last case scenario, he's going to take that. But I think there are a couple of teams out there that could use him as a featured back. Doug Martin, now a free agent. We're going to start seeing more of the cap casualties come around in the NFL. Remember, the first official day of the new NFL season is on March 14th. So you have teams that are going to look to save as much money as possible here in the next few days. In fact, the Chicago Bears actually made a move today, which, I don't think it was surprising. Jarrell Freeman was released today. Freeman signed a three-year, $12 million deal in Chicago in 2016. And that was after four seasons in Indianapolis. His cut is going to save the Bears about $3.5 million on the salary cap. He performed well early on in his tenure with the Bears, had 110 tackles in 12 games, but he was suspended four games for PED use in 2016. He becomes a cap casualty. The Bears also declined their $8 million option on veteran guard Josh Sitton. So again, you're going to start seeing teams use more and more, get rid of these contracts without guaranteed money, or at least ones that they can save on hits. Brian Cushing, another notable name. The Houston Texans released him. They confirmed that earlier today. The Eagles did sign Winston Craig. He's a defensive tackle. The Jets are exercising their options on defensive tackle Steve McClendon and also linebacker Josh Morton. And it was reported today that the Jets would give Kirk Cousins anything he wants. They are willing to give him whatever he wants to come to New York to be their quarterback. Do you see this report?
Yeah, first day of free agency, they're just going to hand him a blank check, say, here you go, write the number on it, and we're good to go. Which, for the Jets, good for them. If they're going to make a move, he'd be the best quarterback they've had since Ken O'Brien. So the Jets have to make a move. If they get a quarterback, the Jets, they won five games last year with that crappy roster.
Ken O'Brien? You're going to go back that far?
He'd be the best quarterback the Jets have had since Ken O'Brien.
I don't think Mark Sanchez was a bad quarterback in New York. I really don't.
He wasn't terrible, but Ken O'Brien was better.
Okay. And then, you know what? Maybe
Kirk Cousins
right.
is better than Sanchez.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. It's a long time.
It's a long time for Jet fans. So I say give him the blank check because I want Kirk Cousins.
Well, more than that's probably going to happen. I believe that's where he'll end up going. Unless, of course, the Redskins tag him and trade him.
Which be, that's kind of a Bush League move by the Redskins.
Not. No, it's not. You think it is?
I don't think that's right.
Why? It's a business, right? I mean, look, players can leave organizations. Players hold out all the time.
And he'll file a grievance and he'll win, so it's...
I don't think he can win. I don't think he can.
I think he will.
Like, the rules of the NFL state that they have the right to franchise tag him.
Yeah.
They're not breaking any rules. See, players have a one-sided view on things. More often than not, I find myself siding with the owners in situations, and this is one of them. He's talking about filing a grievance if the Redskins were to tag him, because then they would trade him to the highest bidder. Okay, it may not be what Kirk Cousins wants, but at the end of the day, the Redskins have a job to do, right? It's a business. So they have to make the best possible football move for their franchise. I don't see anything wrong with it. It may not be what Kirk Cousins wants. He's not going to be able to pick his home. But at the same time, the Redskins are doing everything they can to make sure that they get something for him. And we're talking about a guy that's going to be the top quarterback in the free agent class. How could he win a grievance? What are they doing that is wrong?
I'm just reading into what I'm reading. And he'll file a grievance.
Oh, he will file a grievance.
And he'll win.
I don't see how he could. And here's the thing. Can you imagine a player filing a grievance when he's guaranteed to make $30 million next season? Think about that.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for someone in the same tier as Kirk Cousins' tier. Okay, that's a lot of money.
$150 million. He could get like $60 million like the first couple of years.
And you're going to file a grievance? Are you kidding me? Because you're not getting your way? It's okay for players to hold out all the time. We see it often. How many holdouts did we have this last offseason because players were upset about the amount of money that they are actually going to make? He files a grievance. If the players' union gets a win, it's a sad day. If I was the Redskins, I would absolutely tag Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't even think twice about it. I would do it because the Jets, you just showed me a report, the Jets may give him $60 million in his first season.
Yes, $60 million guaranteed.
Okay.
First year.
If that guy is worth that on the free agent market, the Redskins would be stupid not to tag him and look for a partner in a trade. They would be dumb to not do that.
Crazy.
If I'm a Redskins fan and they don't go that route, knowing that this guy could fetch $60 million in the first year of his contract, I'm upset that they don't exhaust every avenue to try to get something for him.
It's a lot of money in the first year.
Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. I just think it's a petty move on the Redskins' part.
I don't think so. I think it's a smart move. I think it's something that you have to do. I don't know. This is going to be a topic I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. Over the next few days, I think you're going to hear an awful, awful lot about this particular topic. It's a fun one. It's definitely a fun one to dive into. Let's take a look at the schedule otherwise, and we really have nothing. We really have nothing. We're still at the NBA All-Star break, right? We're at the All-Star break until Thursday. So today and tomorrow, we have nothing as far as the national sports schedule goes. We do have the Olympics. Have you been watching the Olympics?
Nope. Don't care.
Not at all. You're a hockey guy. You don't even care about the hockey.
I've tuned in, but it's not the same without the NHL players.
I kind of like amateur players in these types of sports. Because really, look, if you watch curling, you don't know anyone in curling.
No.
You don't know anyone in curling. You watch figure skating, you may recognize a couple of names. Skiing, yeah, everybody knows who Lindsey Vonn is. If we're talking about snowboarding, everybody knows who Shaun White is. I kind of dig the amateur athletes. I get into that. I love high school and college sports as well, so maybe that's why. I'm not going to lie to you. I love the summer games. I'm iffy on the winter games. I really am. I'm iffy. I'm okay.
I got a problem with the Team USA coach for the hockey complaining about the score being ran up when one of the requirements is scoring goals in this tournament. You have to. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way that he was whining that his team got his butt kicked.
Yeah, you have to score as many goals as possible.
Yeah,
that's part of the tiebreaking.
Yeah, that's how. And they got 5 goals. They have to have every goal to advance.
Look, don't give up 5 goals.
Yeah, play better.
Simple, right? Yeah, it is the Olympics. It's one of the biggest stages. We've got a break for just a moment. Again, coming up on the show today, we're going to talk to Coach Lynn Tuttle. I think we'll have more NFL football on the show as well. There's plenty of other topics to dive into. It's all straight ahead here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the boys' high school basketball season came to an end for Emory High on Saturday as the Spartans suffered an 80-74 loss to South Summit in the opening round of the 3A state tournament at Wasatch High School. Emory actually held a slim lead 33-31 at the end of the first half before South Summit took a major 9-point advantage late in the second half. Emory rallied to capture a 1-point lead late in the contest, but it was South Summit that pulled away late to grab the win 80-74. In the setback, the Spartans were led by junior Kyson Stilson. He finished with 29 points to go along with 4 rebounds. Brax Jensen scored 16 points. Easton Gordon finished with 14, and Cade Brazier scored 10. As a team, the Spartans hit just 3 3-point shots throughout the contest, something that was a staple in their offense throughout the year. The loss means Emory will finish the season 11-11. We'll talk with Coach Todd Jeffs later on in the week to recap the 2017-2018 year. We stick with boys basketball, but we move over to Carbon High, and the Dinos also suffered a season-ending loss, falling to the Grand Red Devils 69-56, also in the opening round of the 3A tournament. Carbon was competitive throughout the first half in this contest. They trailed 24-18 at the end of the first half. It was the third quarter that was the difference maker. Grand outscored Carbon 23-11. The fourth quarter was a mere formality. The Dinos suffered the setback despite a phenomenal performance from Derek Hillam. He scored 19 points and accumulated 3 rebounds. Ryan Gagan finished with 18 points to also reach double figures. Grand was led by Cameron Hoppenstead. He scored 23 points and accumulated 4 rebounds. We'll put the final touches on this basketball season for Carbon with an interview later on in the week with head basketball coach Kyle Wilson. We move over to girls high school basketball, and it was an easy first round for the Emory Lady Spartans as they destroyed Providence Hall 86-24 to advance to the second round of the 3A state tournament, which will take place in St. George. The Lady Spartans got the win Friday night, outscoring Providence Hall 23-2 in the opening quarter, and that continued on throughout the contest. They bookended it with a 16-2 run in the fourth. Lady Spartans were led in this contest by Megan Jensen. She scored 25 points and grabbed 11 rebounds to go along with 3 assists and 2 steals. Lainey Jensen scored 16 points, Caselyn Toomer added 15, and Kinley Toomer scored 12. The Lady Spartans will now move on to take on the Carbon Lady Dinos, who also earned a victory in the first round of the 3A state tournament. This contest was also on Friday evening. The Lady Dinos delivered a big victory over Summit Academy, winning by a final score of 52-36. In that win, the Lady Dinos were led by Abby Sacamano. She scored 16 points, 12 of which came from beyond the three-point line. Kelsey Sorensen added 14, and Jordan Bianco scored 9. Now that sets up the epic showdown between Carbon and Emory, and again, that contest will take place Thursday. That'll be at Dixie High School in St. George. Live coverage of that contest will begin here on KOAL at 3:30. The winner of that game will move on to face either South Sevier or Grantsville in the semifinals on Friday. As it sits now, all teams that won on Friday or Saturday move on to St. George for the final 3 days of the basketball season, which will take place Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio for more high school basketball in the coming days. And we end by moving over to junior college basketball, where Saturday night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the USU Eastern men's basketball team dipped to 4-6 in region play with an 83-69 loss to Salt Lake Community College. And the USU Eastern women's basketball team also suffered a setback on Saturday night. They played Salt Lake in the opening game of the night action. USU Eastern dipped to 3-7 on the year with this loss, falling to Salt Lake 74-57. Both the USU Eastern men and women teams will return to the court on Thursday for the final home game of the season to take on Colorado Northwestern. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
So much happening in the local sports world. So much. Just heard the recap of everything that went down over the weekend as far as the high school and the junior college basketball season goes. Coming up on Thursday, it's the big game. Carbon will take on Emory. It's the quarterfinals of the Girls State Championship. I think we've been waiting a little while for these two teams to get together, and now they meet on the biggest stage with so much at stake. And joining us right now to talk about Emory's dominating win over Providence Hall this past Friday, what lies ahead against Carbon and possibly beyond, we have Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans right now. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
You bet, Jordan.
Coach, we get down to the final weekend. I mean, this is what you play for, the final 3 days of the season. There's no surprise that we're still playing basketball, but we'll talk about this past Friday's game. You guys go toe-to-toe with Providence Hall. It wasn't much of a contest, and I expected this, I think, throughout most of the first round, as did a lot of people. I mean, you guys handled Providence Hall 86-24. What was your big takeaway in your team's performance on Friday night?
Well, I thought they'd come out pretty good. You play a team like that, you can definitely come out sluggish and play down to a lower level. But it was good to see the girls come out firing on all cylinders and doing well. We kind of thought Providence Hall, just kind of looking at what they'd done in their region throughout the year, and then watching some game film on them, that kind of what we expected. Typical to what we've been doing with some of our teams in our region.
Yeah, it's difficult when you look at it. Now you got to prepare for three teams that you're going to, from here on out, you're going to play quality teams. There's no more pushover games. And I know you and I have talked about this beforehand. I mean, just trying to stay prepared for what we're going to see now Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I mean, I don't know how much these games help you.
That's my concern, is it didn't help us much. And it's tough to play your starters the whole game just because of fear of getting them hurt. So they went out and played probably 22, 23 minutes, and we went as fast and hard as we could to try to keep our legs under us and try to stay in shape as the best we can. But, yeah, the game's now, nothing's easy. And, unfortunately, when you lose now, you don't get to start over and look forward to the end again.
Coach, you guys are so young. I mean, right now we're only talking about one senior on this team, and Lainey Jensen. Outside of that, I mean, a lot of youth still on this basketball team. these girls don't seem to be playing like underclassmen, and I've thought that all year long. I don't know if it's the experience of going to a state championship last year and knowing what to expect this year. It just doesn't seem like you have a group of juniors on this squad. They play like seniors.
Yeah, they do. I thought that for a couple of years with these girls. They don't play their age. They very little intimidate them, and they sure don't act like they're all juniors right now other than Laney. And I'm sure being in the state tournament the last 2 years, the minutes they got definitely helped out. And I hope when we show up down there Thursday and throughout the weekend, you know, we can kind of keep calm and collected because knowing we've been there before, and hopefully we can show up and play hard to our best ability.
And what was the weekend like for the team, Coach? After you guys got the win on Friday, did you guys get back into the gym on Saturday, or did you give the girls the weekend off?
We give the girls time off. We got back in the gym yesterday morning and started preparing for the upcoming game.
It does seem a little odd. I mean, at this stage in the season, I mean, we're just talking about the girls' team. We're not talking about the boys because their season came to an end. That means there's going to be a lot of focus on Emory High School's girls' basketball team going to the state tournament. There's no divided attention from this point on. I guess from a girls' head coach standpoint, that's going to be somewhat fun, right? I mean, the focus is squarely on this basketball team now.
Yeah, it is. We've had pretty good sports throughout the year, the whole year and past years. So the focus being here shouldn't make any difference for my girls. There's pressure on you regardless of what's going on when you show up down there for the state tournament.
Yeah, is the pressure amplified, though, Coach? I mean, the Deseret News writes an article and says, you know, odds are it's going to be Richfield and Emory. I think everybody expected at the beginning of the year the girls to have a sensational season, especially after the way last season came to an end. Is the pressure amplified now that we're down to the final 3 days of the season?
Yeah, I believe it has. It is. Certainly, myself and all our girls, we've been on the losing side of it last year. We've been kind of looking forward to this point in the season, and hopefully we get an opportunity to erase what happened last year. So, yeah.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Sport and Basketball Team. Coach, let's talk about Thursday's contest. It's going to be an afternoon showdown with Carbon High School. We haven't seen this game since 2015. It's been a little while. Now we get it, and there's no, I mean, all the talk of why the games haven't taken place over the last couple of years, I know that's rampant throughout Carbon and Emory County, but the fact is, now you guys will go toe-to-toe with Carbon. Carbon will go toe-to-toe with Emory, and it's on the biggest stage possible. It's a state tournament game. I mean, it amplifies that a little bit more from a non-region game. I'm almost fine with these teams not playing this year, knowing that now they're playing with so much on the line.
Yeah, it's state tournament now. A lot of pressure. But Carbon's a good ball club. We've got some days to prepare for them. They've definitely got some strength. When they're on the floor, the big guys, I feel like probably their strength. We're going to try to show up and counteract that. And hopefully we'll be all right if we can get out and run and just do what we've done all year.
Yeah, one of the things that stand out to me, Coach, about Carbon, it's defensively they're very, very good. Now, a lot of it, I know you have to pay attention to the competition because, again, you and I talked last week about the fact that you guys scored almost 1,700 points in the regular season. A lot of that has to do with the fact that we're playing teams like North St. Pete twice, Manti twice. I get that. Carbon, on the flip side of that, they've been so good defensively. They only gave up like 750 points in region play this past season. Defensively, that's where they stand out. Offensively, that's where you guys stand out. So it's kind of an interesting matchup in that regard.
Yeah, it is. Just watching game film, they play 2-3, and they play an extended 2-3. All the girls are really active. They cover their area as well. So I don't know where they were in 3A as far as defensive scoring. I know probably in the top 2 or 3, but it's going to be a good matchup. We've got a great offense. We like to get out and run. Watching some of their game film, I believe they're willing to run also, so it'll be an interesting game.
As far as the post goes, that's something that I'm really interested in this particular contest, and you and I had a little bit of a conversation about this off the air. The fact is, this past Friday, Carbon went up against Summit Academy. Summit Academy had a big that definitely did some work. That's Mika Gustafson. She scored 16 points, grabbed 15 boards and 4 steals, and I asked you this off the cuff. How does her game compare to Megan Jensen? And you brought up that these two have seen each other in summer programs quite a bit.
Yeah. The Summit County girl, she's probably a little stronger than Megan. Not near as polished around the rim as Megan is. Megan's fluent going either way. If you take away one shoulder, she's going to go to the other shoulder. In realistic, they're a lot alike. Both of them, I think, made about 2'6"2". The other Summit Academy girl's right there also. And Carbon actually done a well job. Done a good job taking the offense away from her, but she's big enough body. She was able to get in there and rebound and cause some chaos.
One of the other things that stands out to me with this Carbon team is the balance that they can provide offensively. Abby Sacamano scores 16 points on Thursday night. Kelsey Sorensen has been the pillar of consistency for this team throughout the year. She registers a double-double. And then they have some outside shooters. You know, Jordan Bianco, who's just a sophomore but can definitely score the outside shot. McKenna Blank is an underclassman that has been very productive for this team. They have balance on this squad, and that's something that I don't think we've seen a lot of in region play.
No, so we stayed and watched that game with Carbon played Summit Academy, and just like you said, it's pretty balanced versus the big versus the wings and outside. They can knock down some outside shots, and they can go wild underneath with the two big girls. So it's, as far as preparing for, something we've got to play straight up, can't cheat anywhere and help out.
Coach, now that we do get down to a win-or-go-home situation, and you and I talked some X's and O's a little while back in regards to the Richfield game, and you said, you know, that first contest, we fell back in the half-court set a little bit, and you said that hurt this team. Now that we're in the state tournament, I mean, do you plan on going to the full-court press early and often throughout the final three games?
We're not 100% on how we're going to come out for sure. It's something that we definitely got and we'll use if we get in trouble and need it. But when we're trying to put three games back-to-back, you know, you've got to play Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night if you end up being in the final game. Kind of difficult to press the two previous nights and have, you know, a good set of legs to go for Saturday. So we're not 100% sure how we're going to handle that situation.
Yeah, I guess that's something you got to consider now that you're down to the final three games. Something that, you know, you don't play two games and then get 3 days off. I mean, that's not the case anymore.
No, it's play a game and show up the next day and play a game. Same thing for Saturday if you get through Friday. So, yeah, obviously any coach would like to go into a game. And the ideal situation would be get up big and rest your horses late and give them so they can have some energy for the next night. But unfortunately, these games that are happening down there now, they're not going to be like that. It's probably going to be a dogfight from the tip-off to the buzzer, end buzzer.
Coach, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts now that you're 3 years deep into your head coaching tenure with this women's basketball program. Once you get to the final destination, the final, you know, 3 days of the season, how does the game itself change, or does it at all, from what you've seen over the past, I don't know, 3 months?
Well, it changes a little bit as to, you know, scouting other teams and trying to expose their weaknesses and also incorporating, putting new things in. So, yeah, this last, well, probably 2 weeks actually changes somewhat. We don't want to change it, our style of ball by any means. We want to get up and down the floor and, you know, try to get up on that 60, 70-point range. But defensively, a few changes and stuff, but I'd say all in all, it does not change a ton.
And lastly, Coach, everyone came out healthy following that game against Providence Hall on Friday. I know that's always a big concern as well.
Yeah, that's the main concern is get them in there, try to keep them in shape somewhat, let them go up and down the floor, but at the same time, you can't suffer an injury this time of the year. So we come out healthy and looking good going into Thursday.
Coach, thank you again for the time. We'll see you down in St. George at Dixie on Thursday, Friday, and hopefully Saturday as well. Always appreciate the time, and best of luck.
Hey, thank you very much, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Len Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartan Basketball Squad. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to Coach Ted Bianco, and of course, Thursday, right here on KOAL, we are going to have a live coverage of the contest. Myself alongside Scott Labrum will bring you the live play-by-play call. Pre-game coverage will begin at 3:30. Tip-off is set for 4:10. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Trevor Ariza. You listen to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Ariza ahead of the pack. Ariza reverse slam. An explosive game for Trevor Ariza.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, Tuesday edition of the show. You know, it's funny, we were just talking last week about the Notre Dame football program and how they lost their appeal to the NCAA, and they had to vacate 21 wins, which knocked them down on the all-time wins mark list. They go from like 2 to 6, if I remember right. The NCAA has now made a decision to take away Louisville's 2012-2013 national championship in men's basketball. And, you know, we were talking about how really the NCAA didn't have a lot on Notre Dame to take away those wins, but ultimately doesn't matter. I mean, that was a conversation that we had last year. It's not the only instance, for Louisville, it's not the only instance in which a recognized national champion in a sanctioned NCAA sport will now have to give away their title. In fact, 20 prior national champions in Division 1, 2, and 3 have had their titles taken away. And I think that's an interesting topic. Before we get into that, your thoughts on Louisville's national championship being taken away and the banner coming down?
Well, we know they won. So if they're going to take away this banner and their championship, does the NCAA have to give back the revenue they made off the t-shirts and the hats, that money? Do they give that back, or what do they do with it? Because they made money off Louisville winning the national championship. And how can the NCAA go into a private institution? They don't own the building, so how can they take the banner down? They don't own the building.
Well, I think, you know, if you're Louisville, you give it back because, again, you're a part of the NCAA. I said the same thing with Reggie Bush's Heisman.
Yeah.
Did he really have to give that Heisman back? He didn't have to give that Heisman back. No. This, I think, is a little bit of a different scenario. Was there ground to take away their national championship? Was the proof there? Look, I've said this a couple of times in regards to this situation. I'm shocked it wasn't a bigger deal. I remember when the news broke, Patino was basically seen leaving the campus of Louisville. We knew he was no longer going to be the head coach. And then all these other stories started coming out, and I thought, this is going to be the situation that completely alters amateur eligibility in college athletics. And it kind of just went away. Remember how big that story was for about a week?
And then
it just went away.
Yeah, poof, it was gone.
People stopped talking about it. The media stopped covering it. Over the course of nearly 4 years, Andre McGee, who was the director of basketball operations at Louisville, discreetly and sporadically organized parties for Louisville players and recruits. The parties involved women paid to strip and asked to have relations with Louisville players and recruits. Players involved in the probe are retroactively deemed ineligible. Louisville forced to vacate all of its records and its 123 victories from 2011 to 2015. The story goes much deeper than that, though. Obviously, there are issues within the Louisville program, and that has a lot of the reason to do with why Rick Pitino no longer has a job right at Louisville. But ultimately, that's what the NCAA has deemed why they have not granted the appeal. They denied the appeal of Louisville. Going back and looking at Division I, the last time a national championship was taken away was directly from the university. The LSU women's track and field team was required to vacate its 2012 outdoor team championship due to a student athlete's use of a stimulant banned by the NCAA that is commonly found in over-the-counter nutritional supplements. I have no idea. Maybe that lady took it unwillingly. I don't know. But it was directly from the university. So again, LSU took control of the situation, and they took away the national championship. You go back to 2007, Florida State, outdoor men's track and field again. North Carolina didn't lose a national championship over academic problems. Florida State's track and field program did. And I always bring up North Carolina. It's not because I have a vendetta against North Carolina. It's because I thought the NCAA was extremely lenient to North Carolina.
Well, why isn't their banner coming down?
I don't know.
Because they created fake classes and gave out fake grades.
I don't know. I agree with you 100%. I agree, and that's why we've been harsh on North Carolina here. I thought that program was heading towards some sanctions.
They should have their championships revoked and scholarships taken away. What they did is cheating. They made fake classes and had the students go there and gave fake grades. They didn't even go to class. They just made it up.
The NCAA took two national championships away in men's volleyball in consecutive years. I didn't know about this. 2003, Lewis University's men's volleyball team. Again, this was self-imposed. Lewis University beat the NCAA to the decision after discovering that it had multiple players in multiple years ineligible for competition. The year before that, Hawaii men's volleyball. The report showed that one of the team's foreign-born players, four-time first-team All-American, had played on a professional team before competing for Hawaii. On September 5th of 2003, the NCAA stripped the title of Hawaii. Women's softball at UCLA. 1997 UCLA News Bulletin starts. The NCAA announced Tuesday a decision by its committee on infractions to penalize UCLA for over-awarding financial aid in softball. So they went beyond their budget. Arkansas's men outdoor track and field team, they were stripped of two titles. Syracuse's men's lacrosse team was stripped of a title in 1990. And I think you'd have to go back into the 80s outside of that. Howard's men's soccer back in the 70s. San Francisco's men's soccer in 78. UTEP men's cross country in 83. And Tulsa had a women's golf championship revoked as well. So as far as national championships for major sports, remember, USC did not have a title vacated. They had wins vacated because they lost in the national championship that year. Had they beat Texas, they would have been stripped of a national championship. So looking over the course of Division I athletics, rarely has the NCAA stripped a school of a national championship. So I guess you could say this is a little bit unprecedented. You don't see this too often.
Yeah, the NCAA, though, it's a joke, though. It really is. They profited off Louisville. Now they're going to come back and take their banner away. North Carolina gets away with it. It just doesn't make sense half the time.
I don't know.
Taking wins and banners away, we know what happened. We know the outcome.
We do. But the school can no longer profit off of it.
So okay, the NCAA should give that money back that they made off Louisville in 2013.
Well, but at the time, the NCAA, at least they claimed, they didn't know that there was any wrongdoing in Louisville. So by stripping a banner, one of the things I can see, you can no longer use that as a recruiting tool. You can no longer use that to profit. You know, you do 10-year, like the 10-year anniversary of the national championship team. That doesn't exist. Louisville can't do anything for that. So I guess maybe I can see the...
Fab Five didn't exist either because they stripped them of everything. So basically you're telling me the Fab Five didn't exist. Louisville didn't win the national championship. And Notre Dame didn't win those games.
Well, I think if you don't win a national championship, and this was the conversation that we had last week about Notre Dame, who really cares? Because they didn't win the national championship. Had Notre Dame won the national championship that year and they lost that national championship, yeah, there'd be a problem.
So is Michigan the 2013 champion now since Louisville vacated? Since they were the runner-up?
No, nobody gets it. It's gone. Just wiped from the record book. Because if I was Michigan, I wouldn't accept that.
No, it's just, we know Louisville won in 2013. I know they won.
So you have a problem with the NCAA removing the banner. You don't like it.
No, it's dumb. It is dumb to take away banners and wins and stuff. It doesn't do any good. The games are already played.
Okay, so more stringent, I guess you could say, discipline moving forward. I mean, so instead of giving them, and I don't know what the ban is going to be for Louisville. I don't believe there's anything right now, right? Have they been docked any scholarships right now?
No.
Okay. So if you're the NCAA, instead of taking away a banner, would you prefer to see more discipline heading into the future for programs like this?
You should. I think moving forward that if we're going to punish, we should take away scholarships because that hurts the program now and in the future than taking away banners and wins.
That's fair.
It just makes more sense that way.
Sure.
You're going to punish them now, take away scholarships. That way they don't have those tools to get players there to play.
That's fair. And I would actually be, I think that's better than, look, when USC was docked, it affected the players on the team right then and there. Those players could not go to a bowl game.
Yeah, and that,
I had no problem with the scholarships being docked, but was it fair for those kids who were not a part of that team to have to suffer?
No, it wasn't, but that's what happens. And for USC, it took them, 5 years to get out of that hole that they were put in with losing all those scholarships.
Yeah, but that's okay. Losing scholarships is different than punishing the kids that are playing
so
right now.
So we got to figure out something. We can't have North Carolina doing what they're doing and Louisville doing what they're doing and punish one and not the other.
No, I agree. Look, there is a double standard there as far as what happened in North Carolina. The NCAA revoked the 2013 national championship from Louisville. It's a topic that I don't know that you're ever going to find the right answer. If you talk to 10 people, 10 people probably have a different opinion on it. For me, I would like to see these programs punished moving forward. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see, you know, a loss of scholarships moving forward. Tournament bans, bowl bans, look, that's not fair to the kids that are playing right now that have followed the rules, which typically when a program goes through problems, the current kids suffer when they did nothing wrong, and kids in the past did everything wrong, and they got the benefits, and now they're in the NBA, or they're in the NFL, yeah, or they're in Major League Baseball. So, no, I'm with you. Hey, we've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show, fun topics. Still a couple of days away from resuming NBA action, but again, we have some high school basketball coming up on Thursday. That's the big story right now. And again, we're going to talk more about Thursday's game between Emory and Carbon tomorrow on the show. We'll catch up with Ted Bianco. I know you got to watch the games this past weekend. Emory looked very impressive against a bad Providence Hall team. Carbon got a win over Summit Academy that has a stud big. And we'll talk about this with Coach Ted Bianco tomorrow. That game for Emory did them no good.
Nope.
Did them no good. And Coach Tuttle said that earlier in the show today. You just hope to get out of that game healthy. That's what you're looking for. On the flip side of that, I think that game Friday, did a lot for Carbon because they got to look at a stellar post player, and Emory has a stellar post player in Megan Jensen.
She's awesome.
So I'm looking forward to the game. You're going to hear from both coaches on the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. And again, that'll be Thursday. I know as far as the buildup for the game goes, Carbon's the underdog, and we'll talk about this with Coach Bianco on the show tomorrow. Emory's 22-1. Very, very good basketball team. Carbon went up against the number one team of the state last year in the quarterfinals in Desert Hills and beat them. I think this game is going to be very entertaining. Yeah, you build off of it. You do. I know it's a different team for Carbon, but the Dinos have had a lot of success in tournament play, and it's one game. You have a few days to prep for Emory. Carbon is in the best possible situation going into a game against Emory or Richfield, because I think Emory and Richfield are the two best teams in the 3A classification. And I don't think many pundits will argue with you on that. But Carbon is going into a good situation because you get them off a lot of rest, off an opportunity to scout, and I think those are things that play into a factor when you're looking at the grand scheme of things. I'm stoked for this game on Thursday. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. The thing for Carbon is, how did they slow down Megan Jensen? That's the key.
Slow down Megan Jensen.
The Tumor Girls were awesome.
Tumor Girls on the outside. Laney Jensen's one of the best three-point shooters in the state. But on top of that, Carbon's got Kelsey Sorensen down low.
She's very good.
She's very good. Abby Sacamano, Jody Noyes. I'm looking forward to this game. You don't want to miss it. And again, it's going to take place in St. George at Dixie State. If you can't be there, we have you covered right here on KOAL. Also, with all the action that went down over the weekend, make sure you head on over to CastleCountryRadio.com. You can get your complete game recaps. Again, the Carbon and Emory boys done. Carbon and Emory girls continuing on. USU Eastern was in action over the weekend as well. They're going into the final week of the regular season. Next week, we're on the road in Ephraim. Basketball season is almost done locally. And then, of course, so we can't forget about 1A Pinnacle. The Pinnacle boys team will be participating in the 1A state championships as well. So a lot of basketball action still to come, but we are definitely in the twilight. Again, on the show tomorrow, we're going to catch up with Coach Ted Bianco. Later on in the week, we'll hear from Coach Todd Jeffs and also Coach Kyle Wilson of the Carbon and Emory boys basketball squads, and then we're going to gear up for baseball as well. So coming up next, it is NASCAR Live Daytona 500. You had a funny comment. Danica Patrick wrecked in her final performance in NASCAR. Was there any doubt?
No, not shocking at all.
Bubba Wallace did finish second.
He probably should have won. Him and Hamlin got caught up and had some words, exchanged words there afterwards. So, yeah, he should have won.
Now, also, if you're into NASCAR, you know, it's coming to Vegas, not this weekend, but next weekend. You want to win tickets? I'm going to give you a chance tomorrow on the show. Tickets to Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Send you to Vegas to watch 3 days of NASCAR. Your chance to win tickets is coming up tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. NASCAR Live is coming up next. Be safe. We're out.